UNLV will play at Creighton. UNLV beat Creighton in Henderson last season, and now Kevin Kruger is going to take his team on the road to play Creighton. That almost certainly will be a quad one game. Creighton will have to, like, you got to be outside the top 75. I don't think Creighton's fallen that far. So that will certainly be a top or a quad one game. They do play at Dayton as well. Dayton a little more likely, but still should be in the top 75. So that should be two quad one games. The other games that we know, they're going to host Memphis, and they're going to play in Arizona a tournament where they're going to start with Mississippi State, and then they're going to get one of Northwestern or Butler. The home game against Memphis probably will not be quad one. It could be, but probably won't. The Mississippi State and then Northwestern or Butler, you got to be top 50 at neutral site to be quad one. All three of those teams could be, you know, 32nd. All three could be 68th. They should all be quad two at least, but maybe they get one, maybe even two quad one games there. Pacific and Omaha are the other two known non-conference games. Those are both at home. Those are both bad teams. Those will be quad four. So, Adam, Creighton and Dayton should almost guaranteed be quad one games. They might get another one between Memphis, Mississippi State, and either Northwestern or Butler. If I told you that's it for good games on the schedule, and the rest are kind of the filler scheduled wins type of games, is that enough for the NCAA tournament committee when they look at UNLV's resume potentially in March for an NCAA tournament spot?
What are they going to do with those quad one games, Tyler? I mean, that's the question when you're playing at the level that UNLV is playing, right? You got to do what UNLV did last year, which is beat Creighton. And obviously they didn't have the opportunity against Dayton because of the tragic shooting, but you got to do something with those games, because what we've seen in the Mountain West's performance in the tournament outside of San Diego State's run to the national championship is that they are consistently, as the conference would say, underseeded, and then they consistently, as the committee would say, flop on their face. So they're not going to get any leeway. You're not going to get credit for just playing games. You're going to have to go win those games, and then when you get a 9 seed, when you think you should have gotten a 6, you actually have to go win a game.
I am curious to see the non-conference tournament if they get quad one games there, because if you said Creighton, Dayton, and they get two more in that tournament, that's the 4 quad one games out of a 13 game non-conference schedule is a pretty hefty number there. Like you said, you got to win them. If they go 0-4 in those games, it's kind of meaningless at that point. But if they don't, if like those are all quad two games and they only have 2 quad one games, they might be in a position where even if they beat Creighton and Dayton and have those 2 quad one games, the committee might not really see that as enough, because we just saw that. Like, teams got into the tournament, but the committee basically said, yeah, you needed more non-conference quad one games. Your quad one games in conference play didn't mean a whole lot to us. You guys needed more than just 3 or 4 of you beating St. Mary's in the non-conference. So I'm curious to see the rest of the schedule and kind of see how Kevin Kruger applied what the committee said to other Mountain West teams to his schedule, and what that could mean for UNLV's chances at making the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's a good question.
So the NFL violated antitrust laws. A jury found the NFL guilty yesterday. So the NFL is going to have to pay $4.7 billion in damages. That number could get tripled. I don't really understand that part of it, but that number could get tripled to basically $15 billion in damages. This stems from NFL Sunday Ticket and how out-of-market NFL games were made available for viewing. I guess the two key points were an inflated price and that Sunday Ticket was only offered through DirecTV. So you had to get DirecTV to get Sunday Ticket. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be like, say I understand antitrust laws. I am a little confused by this, but the NFL is going to owe apparently $15 billion at the end of the day in this antitrust lawsuit that has been ruled against them.
I saw a great point brought up by Don Van Natta, who has been a guest of ours on ESPN Las Vegas before. We brought him on to talk about the Washington Commanders situation. And he points out that Beth Wilkinson was the lawyer in this case for the NFL, and that she's the same person who produced the report on Daniel Snyder for the NFL that ultimately was buried and no one ever saw. And a legal source told Don that Beth Wilkinson had never in her life handled an antitrust case before, and that going in there with someone who has never done the type of law that you're doing seems like maybe not the best choice with multiple billion dollars on the line.
Yeah, okay. Why? The NFL's not me who'd just be like, all right, who's the only lawyer I can find? Like, what? The NFL just might have lost $15 billion, and you're telling me they went in with a lawyer who's never done antitrust before?
Well, in about an hour and a half, we are going to ask someone more expert than us in this about how that went down.
Valid question, for sure.
Chris Apps Porzingis will miss 5 to 6 months. So he had surgery, he got hurt in game 2 of the NBA Finals, actually came back and played in game 5. 5 to 6 months should be a return in December, maybe January, when he actually gets back to playing basketball or NBA games, I should say. So he'll be back in plenty of time before the season actually ends. Adam, we talk a lot in the NBA about like the injuries in the East this year and how it hurt Philly in the regular season, Milwaukee in the playoffs, and then New York and Indiana in the playoffs. Boston had to deal with Porzingis, but still won the title. We talk a lot about injuries projecting out. We're like, Kawhi Leonard's never healthy. You said earlier in the show about the Suns getting those three guys to be healthy at the same time. Is there a right way to try to predict or maybe just understand which players are more likely to get hurt? Because it still feels a little bit random as to who's going to be healthy and who's going to be hurt in the NBA when we get to the playoffs.
Oh, I don't know how random it is with a 7'2 dude with our build, right? Like, I mean, that seems pretty clear to me that Kristaps Porzingis, who has been somewhat of an injury risk for most of his career, is going to be an injury risk. But, you know, I thought it was like a brilliant Northern Lights to get to see Kristaps Porzingis for just a little while this year, right? Just enough time in the regular season to really make an impact on the Boston Celtics. So it was like gorgeous art to get to see him do what he does best for a little while and become part of a championship team. I still feel a little ownership of the former number 4 draft pick of the New York Knicks. KP was the first one who was gonna save us, and then he blew out his knee, and then our hope disappeared, and then he's been floating around for a while. But I'm glad for him. I'm glad for, you know, for all of us who got to see that gorgeous, gorgeous painting for just a little while before it inevitably melted.
By the way, we didn't get to do a show together right at the end of the NBA Finals, but I do thoroughly enjoy how, I guess, conflicted you were between like wanting to hate the Celtics versus, yeah, they're kind of a really good basketball team, but too good to the point where they're kind of boring. Like, I enjoyed how conflicted you were watching the Celtics.
Well, I mean, there's the existential question of, can I support this thing from Boston, right? And that's hard enough when it comes to being a New York sports fan, because you're basically telling me that I've been drinking Coke all my life, but now Pepsi is, you know, demonstrably better. And I'm like, ugh, but am I really going to? So now I have to deal with that and the fact that Boston shoots a million threes, which you know that you and I are both going to love. And on the other side of this was, you know, Kyrie, who might be a little nicer now, but is still a pretty objectionable human being overall, and Luka, who is the biggest ref whiner potentially in the history of the NBA. So, yeah, I mean, it was all the circumstances lined up to make me feel in conflict, and I'm glad that made you happy.
You would have been perfectly fine if they had just switched jerseys during the finals. Just each team was just wearing the opposite team's jersey. Would have been no problem for you at all.
It really would have fit much better with my preconceived notions and wouldn't force me to think, which at this point of my life, I'm really just hoping things fit into my own little picture of how they're supposed to be.
I understand the question.
The Yankees lost to the Blue Jays yesterday 9-2. The Yankees have now lost 9 of their last 11, and 6 of those 9 losses have been by 4 or more runs. Are the Yankees okay?
No, not right now. No, their starting pitching has absolutely fallen apart, and some of it was to be expected. Luis Gil probably wasn't going to pitch at a Cy Young level for the entire season. Gerrit Cole has not looked right in his first couple of starts back. But let's talk about last night with Carlos Rodon.
Oh, I love that guy.
This dude is a head case. This dude is someone who you absolutely would not trust to even watch your dog for a night. Like, this guy gave up 5 runs before he had an out last night. And part of what happened was that there was a little dribbler down the first base line when the score was 2-0. And it looked like it was going to spin foul. And the Yankees have a rookie named Ben Rice playing first base right now. Never played first base in his life. They had to call him up because Anthony Rizzo got hurt. And so Ben Rice decides to try to let the ball go foul. It hits the bag. And Carlos Rodon is standing right there. And he's not yelling at Ben Rice, but pretty clearly saying, pick up the ball. He's a rookie. And you already gave up 2 runs. And you know what he did on the next batter? He gave up a 3-run homer to the corpse of George Springer. And you know what was bad? He then gave up a 2nd home run to the corpse of George Springer later in the game. A guy who came in hitting 196. The Yankees will probably be fine in the long run. But right now, their lineup is nothing beyond Soto and Judge, and their pitching is burying them before they even get a chance to start most games.
Next question.
Brazil plays Paraguay at Allegiant Stadium. Second game of the group stage for both of these teams in Copa America. Brazil is coming off a draw to Costa Rica. Brazil has not won in their last 5 competitive games. In World Cup qualifying, their last 4 is 1 draw and 3 losses. And then they have the draw against Costa Rica in this tournament. It is their longest stretch without winning a game since 2001. The other game in this group that's today is Colombia against Costa Rica. Brazil should still beat Paraguay, but they are in a position where if they do not beat Paraguay today, they could be knocked out in the group stage, similar to what the United States is looking at. But it's here. I'm planning on going to this game. So watching soccer a day after just a disaster happened for the United States. It's brutal.
All right, try to keep this short. I grew up with Brazil being the standard in international soccer. What has happened to this team?
And here's the thing. I don't know, because their talent pool is still ridiculously good. And one of the weird things is Vinicius Jr., who might be the best player in the world. I know Kylian Mbappe exists, but Vinicius Jr. has been awesome for Real Madrid. The guy is unbelievable. He can't score for Brazil. And some of it's probably small sample size randomness in a sport that's fairly random, but it's very weird that they cannot produce, because their talent pool is ridiculous. It is ridiculously good how talented Brazil is. This is not a case where we're like, uh-oh, Brazil's had a bad 10 years of producing soccer players or something like that. This is still like as talented as it gets, and they can't score. Like right now in the summer with the Euros and Copa America, England has been bad. England is not creating anything. They've been fine defensively, but they've been under 1 expected goals in all 3 of their games. That's not the case for Brazil. They're still creating chances. They just haven't finished them. So I think they'll be fine, but it is a weird thing to have it like, they haven't won a competitive game in like 9 months or something like that. So I think they're fine. Unlike England, who's, I think they're a disaster. I just think they're done for. Brazil should be fine, but it's small sample sizes. You get a red card in the 18th minute against Paraguay, and all of a sudden you might be going home from Copa America when you shouldn't be going home from Copa America. All right, coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, we're going to get into the NHL draft and what the Golden Knights could do tonight, as the draft is here at the Sphere. First off, from the text line, Brian says, Danny asked Tyler what the hell happened to the world's best football team last night in Atlanta. Brian, please check out the podcast. I yelled about this in the first hour of the show. I'll sum it up for you, though. It was sucky. It was very sucky. Also, our code word today to get you entered in the summer of fun. This week's trip is to Nashville. You're getting a Jack Daniel's distillery tour. You're getting $750 in spending money. If you want to get entered to win, text the word beach, B-E-A-C-H, to 702-364-1100. Beach is today's code word, 702-364-1100. That is the text line. This week's trip is to Nashville. And by the way, if you win and you don't want to go to Nashville, you can take $3,000 instead. So get entered, could win some money even if you don't want to take a trip. Again, beach is the word. 702-364-1100 is the text line. Adam Candy is in today for Ed Graney. NHL draft is tonight. The Golden Knights don't have much draft capital. They do have a first-round pick this year, number 19 overall. They do not have one over the next couple of seasons, but they're going to pick in the first round, and then barring a trade, they don't have another pick until round six. They do have two in round seven, so they have a few there at the back end, but they're going rounds two through five with nothing. And Adam, you and I, we've had quite a few conversations about the Golden Knights and their roster construction. We just talked yesterday about kind of trading for guys that are 27, 28 and letting the 32-year-olds go and kind of keeping that perpetual window open with the age there without ever going extremely young. How much does it matter to you from a depth standpoint when we're talking about draft picks and eventually prospects that the Golden Knights are kind of sitting out the majority of this draft? They're not even going to get the opportunity to add players that could either be good for them in the future or trade pieces at some point. Is this where we start to see that depletion of assets and eventually catch up to the team?
I mean, every time we think that, Tyler, they seem to find a way to make a trade from the current roster with maybe one or two guys from the minors, either a player or maybe even a pick. So now my question to you becomes this. When was the last time, and this is what I believe we're coming toward year eight of this franchise now, when was the last time that the Golden Knights drafted and developed a star player?
Star? Never.
Right. When would you say they've developed even a top six forward or a top four defenseman?
Am I pushing it with Nick Hague?
That's as close as you're going to get, in my opinion, right? I don't know that it gets any better than that. And you do have to wonder if the bill ever comes due. Now, I think if you ask Bill Foley, you'll pay whatever that bill is because you won a Stanley Cup last year. So that's fine. But yeah, you do believe that the fact that this organization has traded a lot of high-level talent, right? You would have said not that long ago, oh, well, what about a guy like Nick Suzuki, who has become a star in Montreal? Well, he went to Montreal for Max Pacioretty. Right? You can look around the league and you can see where the Golden Knights have sent their talent. It's not particularly surprising, but they don't have a lot left at this point. I'm out of the game of trying to say this is where it finally comes home to roost in terms of the cap, but you know, I don't know that it necessarily means that the Golden Knights are done contending in 3 or 4 years.
You know what's going to be funny? Nick Suzuki is 24 years old. The Golden Knights trade for him in 3 years.
Perfect. I love it. It's a very Yankee strategy, so I love it. Trade away all your prospects, and then when they become too expensive for other teams, you bring them home. I love it. Use what you got.
So, again, Golden Knights do have a first-round pick tonight, so they should be adding a player to that prospect pool that should, I assume, be kind of
who will be traded for Nick Suzuki.
Yeah, eventually, yeah, in 3 years, traded away. It'll be great. I wanted to ask you this, too, about the Golden Knights. Mainly, Ed should be here. This is really an Ed thing because he's the idiot that agrees with Kelly McCrimmon on this. Sinbin.Vegas tweeted out, the NHL handed out the Hart, the Norris, the Vezina, and the Calder, as well as named the first and second all-star teams and the all-rookie team. No Golden Knights player got a single vote for any award. Not win the award. Not a single Golden Knights player got voted for any awards that were handed out last night. Kelly McCrimmon said this year's team was the best team in franchise history.
Please stop. Please, please, please stop. No. If they were the best team in franchise history, then they would have played a lot deeper than they did. I don't want to hear what we heard yesterday about the idea of they needed more time to come together. You win or you don't win. And the fact that we are going to talk about this as, well, you know, what they could have done, that to me has the strong whiff of what you hear all the time with, well, you know what, we lost to them, but we know in here that we're the better team. Do you? Because we have a way of measuring that, and it's a scoreboard. So I don't want to hear about that. the fact that there was no one nominated for an award, who is it that was snubbed? Right? Yeah, you tell me, Tyler.
It's no one. I mean, maybe Jonathan Marchessault could have gotten a vote because he had a great season, but it's no one. They didn't have, largely they didn't have a lot of guys play an entire season, but they didn't have anybody that had a standout year outside of Marchessault, and he didn't truly have a standout year when we're talking about an MVP vote. So yeah, nobody truly got snubbed either.
No, nobody got snubbed at all, and that's fine. Right? You should be happy about that. If you're going to say this was your best team, again, that's debatable. If you're going to say this was your best team, then shouldn't you be thrilled about the fact that nobody got nominated for anything individual? Do you need that individual recognition? You shouldn't. The 96 Yankees are the first team that come to mind for me when we talk about this, because it was the sort of team where nobody hit 30 home runs. Nobody on the roster. Right? They didn't have anybody who was in serious awards contention for most of that year. So no one cares, because in the end they won. And for the Golden Knights, what is it that you feel snubbed by in some way? It's silly. You can't feel like just because someone was the standout on your team means that they were better than the standout on another team. There were some absolutely dominant individual years this year throughout the NHL, and the Golden Knights didn't have any of them.
Snubbed. Best team in franchise. They got snubbed in the playoffs too. They should have gotten to advance even though they lost the series. Snubbed by the NHL's format. If this if that was a three-game series, the Golden Knights would have won the Stanley Cup. But instead they got snubbed by these weird seven-game series they expect teams to play. Ridiculous. Golden Knights didn't have the greatest year, finishing eighth in the West and getting bounced in the first round, even though Ed will come back on here at some point in July and tell me it was the best team in franchise history, because Ed's insane. It's a lot of fun that way. All right, coming up next year on ESPN Las Vegas, we're going to get into the NBA with John Von Tobel. Patrick on the text line asked or says, I need Blink-182 tickets. When is the last day to win? Patrick, today is. Tune in or stay tuned in like 10 minutes from now. You're going to have a shot to win Blink-182 tickets after we talk to John Von Tobel. Good morning, John.
What's going on, guys?
Why are you talking to us? You're in California. Aren't you on vacation?
I am, but Danny's a friend of mine, and he asked me to do a hit, and I'm just on the phone, so it's not like that big of a deal. If I had to be on camera, I would have told you guys hell no.
Okay, yeah, we don't do that around here. Cameras, are you kidding me? What, do you want us to do something like it's 2024? That's a ridiculous question there. All right, do you have a hot take on Bronny James getting picked 55?
I have a take. I would just say that I think he's been kind of put in a really weird spot, right? It's kind of tough because a lot of people just assume that he's kind of is. Right, this what is he being called, the Nepo baby who doesn't deserve what he's got and all these sort of things. And maybe he doesn't get drafted if he's not LeBron's son. But maybe also he's got a lot of pride as a basketball player and wants to actually prove everybody wrong. And it's just one of these no-win situations. And it kind of stinks. Like, you saw him at the draft party yesterday, and he didn't, like, have any emotion at getting drafted because it was largely an event constructed by forces around him. So I just kind of feel oddly bad for the kid. And I just think he's in a no-win situation, and hopefully he can go out there and just do what he wants to do, because it feels like this has been something that's been pushed by everybody but Bronny James, you know?
Yeah, and on the opposite side of drafting, John, for the Lakers, they then take Dalton Connect, a much older player. Are the Lakers in win-now mode perpetually as long as LeBron is there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. When you look at their decision-making, they hire LeBron's podcast host. They draft his son. Like, they draft another kid who's, like, 45-year-old and basketball age. Like, yeah, they're trying to do as much as possible to win right now. And you can't really blame them, because that's the tax you pay if you got a player like LeBron James on your roster. And I think they're also trying to, like thread the needle, too, because I do think J.J. Redick could be a pretty good coach that could develop guys and help them, and they do have a track record of developing players at a really high rate, so maybe they're going to be able to thread the needle, but it's pretty certain that they're just trying to do everything possible to win right now, and the tough part is that they're probably not going to be able to.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they even a top six playoff team? Are they in the play-in for a third straight year?
Oh, yeah, I think that's the case, right? I mean, if you're just doing the game, we're talking about, what, Minnesota, Denver, Dallas, Oklahoma City. We're already at, what, five. The Clippers are going to be a competitive team. Like, you have all these others. You have rising players and teams like the Houston Rockets who are going to go big fish hunting, like the Suns. Yeah, dude, they're going to be a play-in team, and that's going to be really tough. And that's why I don't really understand, like, what the direction totally is, but you have to do it because you got LeBron.
All right, I will ask the first question about the Knicks, and then I'll let Adam do whatever he wants to do with his Knicks fandom there. If we just say Knicks defense, can they be the best defensive team in the NBA next year?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think the thing that would probably keep them from doing that entirely is, are they going to get Isaiah Hartenstein back? Because he is one of the better rim protectors, rim contesters out there. And if you're not going to get him back, you know, can Mitchell Robinson fill that role? Who's going to be the other center that you're going to play behind him or in front of him? So I think I would keep that from him. But even then, it's kind of about finishing like top 10. Like, they're going to be extremely good. So, yes, I think they can.
All right. So the question, John, has been, are we going to see Tibbs 2.0 with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah from the Bulls, where he grinds everybody to dust in the long run, now that you've got guys who have either an injury history like Ananobi or guys like Mikal Bridges who have been historically pretty durable, but you're going up against the ultimate test with the way he runs his starters out there?
Yeah, well, we've already seen it, though, right, Adam? I mean, you just witnessed your team doing that, which is, okay, cool, we have this really good team. Let's make a playoff run. Oh, and then after we go up 2-0 over the Indiana Pacers, everybody just falls apart and dies on the court, and we have nothing left. Like, you kind of just saw it. And I guess, like, I personally think, I love the way they're constructed, right? But I also personally think it's kind of worrisome. Like, one of the first things you heard when they got Mikal Bridges, like, he never misses a game. This is great. It's like, yes, but, like, it doesn't mean we should try to run him into the ground. It doesn't mean he can never miss a game. So, like, I think it's a positive, but I think we've seen it. And I do think if you're, like, in the Knicks front office, like, you got to talk to Tibbs a little bit. Be like, bro, like, we have a good thing here. Maybe you should just change a little bit so we can maximize this roster. Because the other guy that you just signed to a massive deal is the opposite of Mikal Bridges, where OG Anunoby regularly misses time almost every single year. And we saw it again in this postseason. And that's not going to be as solid in terms of availability.
What is Julius Randle's role on that team? Is he even on the team when the season starts?
I mean, I think he's the expendable piece, right? I mean, if you're trying to use, like, salary filler, trade it out, or do something else, maybe swap him for, you know, maybe a couple of the role players, whatever it is. Like, if you're trying to trade one for two, like, he just seems like the expendable piece out of everybody else. Randle's done a pretty good job. He's a very good player. But when you look at the value of everybody else, I mean, you need Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart to come off of the bench. Obviously, OG and Obi and Mikal Bridges aren't going anywhere. Obviously, Jalen Brunson's not going to go anywhere. They want Isaiah Hartenstein back. Maybe Mitchell Robinson is the other expendable piece, but you need center depth. We have seen now multiple times in the postseason, centers are important. You need depth. You need size. He's definitely the expendable piece. I don't know if they exactly flip him or what they would, but if there is one more move left to be made, he's going to be the one at the top of the list.
Talking to JVT here on the press box, and I'm about to go as boomer as you probably would expect me to go, even though I'm a millennial. This was the hardest year as an old man to follow the draft yet, as we had so many international players, young college players, etc. For someone like you who has followed this league very closely for a while, was this overall for you as down of a draft as everyone said that it was? Or do you think that there are some guys in here who are going to be able to make an early impact?
Yeah, I think there are. I think the thought that this is a down draft is actually just replace the word with unknown, right? I think that's one of the things is a lot of these guys we haven't really watched. And so if we don't know it, then it can't be good. But I think there can be guys that are going to be pretty good for their respective teams within this draft. And it's not even just the international guys, right? Like let's take, for example, Cody Williams, who got drafted by Utah. We've watched him play for Colorado. Cody Williams should be freaking awesome. Like, he is a wing player who's like 6'7". He can score in all three areas. He can run in transition. He can handle. He can defend. Like, he should be really freaking good. Reed Sheppard, too. Like, it's not just this whole thing that, hey, these international players, you know, Zachary Richey is just a 3-and-D that I haven't seen play. Like, no, man. Like, a lot of these guys can be, I think, really intriguing and really good for their respective teams. So, no, Adam, like, I think a lot of these guys can be pretty good. And we have lots of down draft years where, you know, I think it was Rudy Gobert's class that was widely viewed as down the year it happened. You got a lot of guys that came out of that class. So I think it can be a very impactful class. It just depends on how each of these guys are developed in their respective new landing spots.
Why do you think Zach Edey and Donovan Klingon both went in the top 10?
Well, so I think there's a couple of things. I think it actually makes sense that Donovan Klingon went in the top 10. Zach Edey, I think that Memphis was a team that was thirsty for a center. It was like, screw it, there's one left on the board. Let's go get him. I'm not sure. if he was really worth that. For Klingon, look, he has the ability to be a Rudy Gobert type, right, which is play primarily in drop coverage, contest every single shot. He's got a little bit more athleticism. Maybe he's got a three-point shot. He's at least reportedly working on it. And if that happens, then look out. But you've seen now the value in these last few years of having a center that can really protect the rim. And at the very least, get you pretty far, right? Gobert and the Minnesota Timberwolves got very far because he had good perimeter defenders and a backstop like him that could just terrorize everybody. Your offense? That's another question. But I think that's why. Like, you get this copycat-esque form every once in a while, right? It's cyclical. What's the best player in the league, or who's the best player in the league? Well, Nikola Jokic. All right, let's go try to get centers to try to combat this. And for Memphis, like, they're a team, Tyler, that has generally tried to play that drop coverage style. Remember, Jenkins comes from the Bud tree, and Bud loves to play that drop coverage, and that's how they got successful. And so you want to bring in a guy you can do that with. I just don't know if it's Edie. So I'm going to be really interested, because that move kind of reeked of desperation. It was like, man, we really wanted Klingon, but we couldn't get him. Let's just take the other big guy and let's go. And I'm not sure if that's going to be a great fit.
Talk about that cyclical nature, John. Is there anything to the sort of loose comparison that's been rattled around in my head about running backs and the NFL kind of not really going back towards saying, oh, well, some teams are going to beat you by pounding the rock? Is there anything to that idea that some teams are now looking at bigs in a different way than they were a couple of years ago?
I think they are to a certain extent, Adam. I think it's, but you still want your bigs to be versatile. And I think that's going to be like the difference maker, right? Like, look at Derek Lively, for example. So Derek Lively turned out to be a fantastic piece and helped the team get to the NBA Finals. And he's got versatility. He's not just this plodding big man. He does actually have a post-up game. He's a very good rebounder. He's a good shot blocker. He's a lob threat, which is always the key word, right? You always want a lob threat for your centers. And he's athletic enough that if he needs to, he can go out and contest the corners or whatever it is. So let's bring this back to like what we just talked about. Klingon could probably do all that. Klingon fits in that kind of archetype of player. Zach Edey, I don't know. Like, if Edey's sitting there and he's under the rim and all of a sudden he's got to go contest a shot in the corner, do you think he's making it? Because I don't think that's the case. And I think that's where that ends up being a problem. So I think you're right in the sense that, like 5 years ago, it looked like it was just, hey, just sign some random center and we'll be fine, right? Because everybody else is going to be 6'7 and uber athletic. I still think you're doing that. But I think that teams have realized now, like, no, if we can get an athletic and good defensive center to plug in there at the five, then we've got a lot of versatility and we can also destroy teams on the glass and do good things at our five. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing, that shift back to that.
John, since you started this by declaring your friendship with Danny, I'm just going to have to let you know that Danny has been locked in for the better part of this hour on cornhole. He's been watching the Kentucky Colonels and the Ohio Aviators for about 40 minutes now.
Yeah, that sounds about right for Danny. He's going to pretend that he knows everything about cornhole here in the next
He already has. Yes, he already has.
No, I'm just repeating what I've seen on screen.
Yes, he already has been telling me how much money he thinks they make, which ones are good. He told me this was the B team of the Kentucky Colonels.
Well, as long as he doesn't start doing what everybody else in the sports betting Twitter space is doing, which all of a sudden they're PLL lacrosse experts and firing out parlays and whatnot.
I'm waiting for Danny's breakdown on who to bet on.
That's not coming from me.
Yes, no. It is. Let's do it, Danny. All right, John.
Spanky Smith.
Yeah, Spanky Smith over here. He's John Von Tovel. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, here we go. We got tickets to give away. Patrick, I hope you're paying attention. If you want to go see Blink 182, they are here in Vegas on July 3rd, next week, at T-Mobile Arena, and we've got a pair of tickets for you. 702-364-1100. That is the phone number, 702-364-1100. Two tickets to see Blink 182 at T-Mobile Arena on July 3rd. Caller number 8 at 702-364-1100 is going to win a pair of tickets to see Blink 182. Adam Candy from Legal Sports Report is in. Adam, do you think professional cornhole players make more than WNBA players?
No, I don't.
Because Danny does.
But Danny, do you have any evidence of this, or are you just really excited about watching cornhole?
No, so this is exactly how I phrased it. I turned to Tyler and I said, just off a quick Google search of how much cornhole players make, the average, according to this Google search, the average cornhole player makes $64,000, and the higher ones can make $100,000. That's how I phrased it.
All right. And what about the WNBA players? Did you do that quick Google search?
I did not. I didn't even bring up WNBA players.
I did WNBA comparison simply because there are players that make less than $100,000 on their salary. I don't believe Danny's quick Google search because mxcornhole.com, the number one news source for all cornhole-related events.
There you go.
The biggest cornhole tournament, which is the one that's on our television in the studio, the winners take home $10,000.
Hey, that's what I told you. Remember?
So the biggest tournament, if you win.
Yeah, but that's tournament. That doesn't include like sponsorship and all that. All
right. I don't think Corn Nuts is paying this guy enough to get to $60,000.
I wonder who pays more, Corn Nuts or Johnsonville Brats?
Well, Johnsonville Brats isn't up here. So.
Yeah, I know. They used to be. Yeah, they used to have the Johnsonville truck and everything.
Danny apparently knows the old sponsors of Cornhole. So maybe I should defer to Danny's knowledge over here because he's got in-depth memory of who used to sponsor the Cornhole tournaments. Things are going well here, Adam. It is Friday afternoon in late June.
I'm just kind of stunned here at the moment that Danny remembers the historic sponsorship of the Cornhole event. Danny, I would say read a book, but you'd probably read a book about cornhole.
I'm actually in the process of reading a book. I've been working
that
on
is,
it for about 6 months, and I'm only 100 pages
that.
In.
That is the funniest way you could phrase that. I'm in the process of reading it, as if it's this really difficult task with a lot of steps to get through.
Well, because I would only read it like when I was working at DraftKings, but since my DraftKings job is over for the summer until preseason NFL starts, I don't read anymore.
How do you remember what's happened if it's
because,
taken you this long to read
well,
the book?
It's the history of the mob. So, like, I remember some stuff because it really interests me. Like, if I was reading, like, a regular, like, fiction book or something like that, I would forget for sure.
When's this process?
The process.
Back up?
The process will pick back up halftime of the first game I work in August.
Trust the process.
Actually, no, I take that back.
The process.
It'll pick back up in July when I fly to Mexico. I'll read on the plane.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
It's impressive. Just sleep on the plane.
It's a day flight.
Ow.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever, Danny.
A day flight? Wait, where in Mexico are you going that takes a full day?
Well, no, like I'm flying during the day.
Oh, it's a daytime flight. I thought you said the flight was going to take an entire day, and I thought that you were going to have some sort of national treasure sort of adventure going on here. But okay, so the process of reading the book, I just want to get down to this. The process, is the first thing, like, do you have to go back like 10 pages to remind yourself of what you had been reading before? Or like you talked about with the mob, like since you were around for so much of this, like you just remember all the things that happened.
Usually whenever I'm reading, I'll go back like maybe a page and just like trigger my memory that way.
Right. Oh, yeah, Meyer Lansky. Okay, on we go.
We're just getting to him in the book.
Wow, look at that. Have you been to the Mob Museum?
Oh, I've been like 4 or 5 times.
Okay. Of course you have. It's a big process.
They have a bar underneath. Me and my fiance used to go like once a month.
Once a month to the Mob Museum bar?
Yeah,
it was cool. Live close?
Were you hoping to get were you trying to get recruited?
No, it was just a cool place.
Were you hoping to maybe pick up a little side gig or two, beating somebody up?
You never know.
He's an associate of Spanky, so maybe.
That's true. Spanky Smith cruising for side gigs. Hey, I need a little contract work here.
Oh, Danny, what a wonderful time it is. What are you betting on, by the way? All I know is you were complaining that there's no... Nobody in Vegas has rookie of the year odds for the WNBA.
Yes. Yeah, I was telling you I might have to get my gambling van and go down to the border. The odds for Angel Reese dropped from +750 to 4-1 in the last 3 days.
Well, it sounds like you missed the window of opportunity.
I know, and I need to go get it before she becomes the favorite.
No, it'll go back up
when
again.
She's going to have 15 straight double-doubles.
It'll go back up again.
And Caitlin Clark is telling people that she doesn't get advice from anyone in the Fever organization.
That's not what she said.
Oh. That is actionable betting advice.
That is not
actionable
what she
betting.
Said.
Oh, my God. She is not listening to the Indiana Fever video coordinator. She's done.
She was asked if she... like the best advice she'd gotten during a game, and she answered by saying, "I don't get any advice during games."
I wish.
Which, yeah, she did say, "I wish" at the end there. Which, when I watched it, I had the implication she was talking about, like, players giving her advice. There is a chance she just meant straight up none of the coaches are giving her advice either, but she did not say nobody in the Indiana organization is giving her advice. Calm down, Danny.
Things are off the rails. It's a great day.
Is it? There? Her coach did just say she needs to shoot more.
Yeah, she shot twice yesterday in the second half.
Well, I didn't watch them play yesterday. I'm not going to pretend to give you a breakdown on what teams are doing. I do know she gets double teamed off ball screens more than any other team in the WNBA. Not player, more than any other team in the WNBA. The idea of her shooting more probably has a lot more to do with having to get her open, because teams know, well, don't let Caitlin Clark hit 10 threes in a game and we'll probably beat the Indiana Fever.
Also, she's passing the ball really, really well. We're actually getting to see that part of her game that you only got to see a little bit of at Iowa, because they needed her to score 40 a game. The Fever don't need her to score 40 a game, but you also might be happy if some people on the other end of these passes were making more shots. I mean, she's got 13 assists in a game and could easily have 15, 16, 17 if people are making shots.
Yeah, I need to look up what the Fever shooting just like inside the restricted area, because it's got to be bad. The amount of times I've watched their games and it's just they've just missed layups is pretty staggering for the Indiana Fever. So that's not great. But there's Danny's gambling advice. His advice is that you're too late to bet on Angel Reese, because you should have bet on her to win Rookie of the Year a week ago.
Should have read that chapter of the book, shouldn't you, everyone?
Yeah, it's a process. It's a process to get advice from Danny. But the gambling van for Spanky Smith might be back in action very soon.